on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Friday edition of InvestTalk. It is, what is the date today? Wow, the 9th, October 9th. I wasn't paying much attention. I apologize for that. October 9th, 2015. We're here to help you expand your knowledge and give you some perspective, if we can, about money and about how to earn it, save it, and grow it. And one of the ways we can enrich your knowledge is keep you up to date based on what's written in the premium newsletter. Today, it goes out every Friday, as you probably realize by now. Today, I talk about corporate earnings for the third quarter. They're starting to filter in, but just trickling in right now. And, of course, the bellwether is Alcoa Corporation. And they came in with unspectacular numbers, numbers that were below expectations. And why is that important? Well, because Alcoa is kind of a bellwether of industry. A lot of aluminum products are in a lot of different cars and planes and a lot of different parts of our economy. So, it kind of is important. Also, I gave a couple stock ideas. There's always a section called Stock Ideas. We always give two every week. Another popular feature is the portfolio management section. This week I took a look at the big swings of markets over the last 20 years, and riding those waves are scary and frustrating, and how to improve your possibilities of wading through those scary and frustrating times. And of course, Consumer Watch, we talked about this, the budgeting, and should you have one and how to do it. Here's a couple of soft pieces of software that you can use. It's free. And then that's pretty much what we talk about in that premium newsletter every week. So if you have an interest, it's $9.99 a month and comes out every Friday. You can sign up by just going to investtalk.com, that's with two T's, and scroll down to the bottom of the page. Now, do you have questions about investing or budgeting? Check in now. Why not? Please feel free to join in the conversation. And before we go any further, let's go ahead and take a look at our 24-hour listen line. We're here for you all the time. 888-99-CHART.
Hey, guys. I have a question about the Fed. I just wanted to know why people aren't more worried about the fact that the Fed still hasn't raised rates. Doesn't the fact that they can't even raise it by a quarter of a percent indicate our economy is worse off than everybody seems to think? It's not like we're going from near zero straight to 4%. It's just a quarter of a percent, I just wanted to see what your opinion was on that. Thank you.
Well, actually, I think you have a valid point. It's just a quarter of a percent. They can even do an eighth of a percent. They can do, They can do whatever they want, and they can't even move at a quarter of a point. Now, your assumption that the economy is worse off than most people think might not be correct. But I do think the economy is not very strong, and I think everybody agrees with that. And I think the economy in the third quarter that we're going to see the GDP numbers are going to be pretty mild. Pretty mild. But also, you got to remember, one of their big mandates is to fight inflation. Well, there's nothing to fight. And even in their minutes that was released yesterday for the last meeting, they pointed that out. That was one of the big worries. There's no inflation, and we certainly don't want to slow the economy down by raising rates even a quarter percent. But you're right. Why does quarter percent even matter? It's so small. What kind of impact would that have on the economy? It's more psychological, too. Remember, our economy can go in recession just by the fact that everybody thinks it's going to go in recession. Why? Because our economy is driven by consumers. If consumers get worried, and if they get worried, they stop spending, we get thrown in a recession. Why would they get worried about the Fed raising rates? Because it raises the specter of interest rates are going to start increasing now. And therefore, we need to slow down our spending, and or you know, we can't afford houses anymore. Whatever it would do, there's a component of psychology in here with what the Fed's trying to do. But I'm agreeing with you. I think that why would everybody freak out over 0.25%? Shouldn't. Is a bear market fund a good strategy for you? A bear market fund. That's one of our talking points today. Also, I think you can stop panicking about the stock market now. And I got some reasons why that is so. There's a lot of money sitting on the sideline of people and professionals and amateurs very much worried about the market. And when that happens, that means a lot of people are out already. So we'll go into it in more details here and some of the reasons, I think. I want to talk about housing a little bit and about cash buyers of housing. That's some interesting statistics I think you'll like. And for fun, by the end of the show, I'm hoping to go over the difference between Oktoberfest in Germany versus the U.S. What are the differences? We all know that both places, it's all about drinking beer, but is that the only thing that's going on? I've got 5 differences. I think they're pretty interesting, and we're going to share that too. But, of course, it's what's on your mind that's important, not on what I want to talk about. The Dow ended up being up. The market was up today. Dow up 34 points, the Nasdaq up 19, and the S&P only up 2. So the broader market wasn't as strong as certain parts of the market. And that we've had like 5-6 days up in a row. And, of course, you know, every time that happens, you know you're going to have a couple of days down. It's just how much up versus how much down. So expect next week to see a couple of down days. I would not be surprised. And maybe it may be an opportunity to buy something. Maybe. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. I want to hear your comments and questions today. InvestTalk is made possible each day by KPP Financial. Our firm serves clients all across the United States. So if you want some money management help, you just give me a call. We'll talk about it in depth. If you'd like to see descriptions of our investment program, just go to investtalk.com and click on the investment tab. You'll see things like our disciplined equity program, which is designed for focused growth for maximum returns. Take a look. Okay, we're going to go to a podcast listener, Gene in North Carolina, wants to talk about the Fed. How are you doing, Gene? Thanks for listening.
Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to give you my 2 cents about why the Federal Reserve doesn't want to raise interest rates.
Sure,
yet.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it is because the economy is too weak, and I think their sort of worst nightmare is if they started raising rates and the economy wasn't strong enough, they would have to reverse course and then decrease the rate.
Yes, it would.
And if they did that psychologically, that's sort of admitting that things are getting worse and they need to take drastic action. So whenever they raise rates, they only want to go in one direction, that's up.
So you're saying that you think the psychology is if they started to raise rates, which they kind of want to do, we all know they want to raise rates, that they're worried that if that's a mistake, the psychology would be that they're going to have to admit it and go the other way, and everybody's going to know that, and that's going to stop people from spending because they're going to freak out because they think the economy is worse than it really is.
Exactly. Them, if they ever raised rates and lowered it, that says a lot more than just jawboning, you know, the market up or down. You're taking action.
That's a good point. You're probably right, Gene. Yeah. That sounds logical. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah, it sounds logical to me. I think that's, you know, a worthy point. So besides inflation, that they're supposed to fight inflation, there's none to fight. You know, they got that psychology part in there that's kind of important. So it is important. Don't think it's not. Don't think psychology doesn't play its role. It does. Let's talk about bear market funds, and in particular, how easy it is to go short the market, meaning that you bet against it. If it goes down, you could own positions that go up. By buying ETFs or mutual funds that do that, short the market. The problem with this is these instruments are pretty sophisticated. And the technique of shorting the market and when to do it and when to get out, is tricky. Most people lose money when they do shorts. And I will admit that even in my case, so I quite often I will lose money. And I know that. But that's not the purpose of the short. The purpose of the short for me is when I put them on is to protect the assets, protection, like insurance. I'm protecting the longs that I have. I don't want to sell these positions because I want to hold on to them, had them for a while. But I want to protect the overall value of the portfolio. This is one of the reasons that you could use short ETFs. But there's a technique to that. It's not just, oh, I'll just buy a bunch of shorts and I'll make money on the downside. I wish it was that easy. It never is. Most people lose money on the shorts. And if you think of it as a strategy of insurance as opposed to a strategy of making money, you'll be a lot better off. Now, why is that? Because long-term, the market has an upward bias, not a downward bias. So, first of all, you're going against the long-term bias. Now, obviously, we know there are times when it's smart to do so. But when do you get out of the short? When do you get in? When do you get out? When do you get in? That is the most difficult. So, how do you judge? What do you use to get in and out? Well, we use charting in my firm. We use the charts of the indexes to tell us that is it recovering? Is it still in a downtrend? Have we recovered? And that's when we decide that. So just try to remember that it's not as easy as the concept seems. Always have in the back of your mind the market has an upward bias. And it goes up a lot more than it goes down. And therefore, if you're shorting, which is predicting that the market's going to go down, you're going against the long-term bias. And can you do that as an average investor that doesn't have a lot of time to spend on this? It depends on your sophistication. How much are you in tune with the market and what happens? It's and even professionals, trust me, it's difficult. It's not a simple thing. So just be careful if that's what you want to do is short the market, because it's a difficult thing to do. Now, there's a lot of different ways to do that. While we're on the subject, be more careful of the leveraged funds. Those are pretty sophisticated instruments. And so you have to really learn how they work, because they don't work. They're really, these leveraged funds are really for short-term ins and outs, really for the trader. Really. So you need to be careful which instruments you use. Now, before the end of the day, I want to talk about not panicking. I think the stock market now might be a time to start teasing your way in. I mean, there's no guarantee of that, obviously, but, we'll talk about some of the reasons why I think that. And we're going to also talk about property values and cash buyers in the home market here in the United States. And the difference between the Oktoberfest here in the U.S. versus the Oktoberfest in Germany. Now, yes, both of them concern themselves with a lot of beer drinking. Okay. So that's not a difference, drinking beer. But there is differences about the beer. You'll be surprised. Anyways, that's what we're going to talk about this hour. But, of course, your conversation, your topics come first. I'm Registered Investment Advisor Steve Peasley. Our number to join in on the conversation is 888-99-CHART. I'd love to talk with you, and you're listening to Invest Talk.
Now is a good time to call Invest Talk.
I had a question on my 401k.
We're here for you. What's your question? 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve right now on Invest Talk. Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. These funds, whose assets automatically shift into more conservative investments as you approach retirement, are increasingly the default option for many 401k plans. Did you know your 401k plan uses target date funds? That's our talking point for Monday's podcast. Hear more about it and bring your questions. We hope you can join us then.
Job number one on Invest Talk is answering your questions, as you know. Our 24-hour listen line is open for any money questions. 888-99-CHART.
Yes, this is Jay in Georgia. Heard you say the other night that you'd started putting on some positions in some oil companies, energy companies. And as I look at them, all of them, or most of them, have somewhat higher forward PE than current PE. And I'm just interested in how y'all think about that and how the stock is likely to perform if it's not going to make as much in the future as it's been making. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Okay, good question. Had you ever noticed in recessions that the PE ratio is pretty high at the worst part of the recession, and that is actually the best time to buy stocks? So, we're talking about energy, and I like the big cap energy stocks, ExxonMobil, Chevron. Justin likes different ones than I do, but he likes the big ones too. But, you know, if you look at the earnings, you know that the earnings have been suffering because of the low dollar. So the PE ratios are not that cheap because the earnings, the E, have gone down, and they are projected to go down, even though next year they are projected to rebound a little bit. So that the PE looks kind of high. But remember, you're trying to buy these things when they come off a low, the price of the stock. Therefore, the price stock got beat up because their earnings were bad. So you're really trying to look forward and say, let's take ExxonMobil. I'm not recommending you buy ExxonMobil, but they made $7.60 last year. This year, they're going to make $3.90. So the stock got beat up, correct? For that reason. But next year, they're going to rebound to $4.20. Now, the stock came down from $104 down to $79. Okay, well, yeah, the stock came down, but the earnings almost got cut in half. But the stock price didn't get cut in half. It would be at $50 if it was. So the PE looks a little steep based on the earnings. You see how that works? But the earnings are turning around. They're going to turn around because oil prices have stabilized and have started to move up a little bit. So remember, you're trying to look forward. What are the earnings going to be like going forward? And you're really just looking for, in the commodities section of the market, where all the commodities got beat up, you're just looking for stabilization and some type of turnaround in the future, if the price has been beat up enough. It's not simple, but that's a very good question. I appreciate you asking it. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So what do you guys want to talk about? What is on your minds? I like talking about various things. How about you can stop panicking about the stock market now? There's reasons that I'm pointing out. Remember, there's been a lot of panic about the stock market, and there's still a lot of people still very worried about the market. And, you know, they have justifiable reasons. I'm worried. Don't think I don't worry about that. But let's look at some of the basics why maybe you shouldn't be so worried about it. First of all, the S&P is not overvalued, at least not by much. If you look at the CAPE ratio, the S&P 500, you'll find that for this metric, it's right at the 25-year average. So, and the dividends for the same S&P 500 is 2.5% right now versus an average of 2.1%. So you're actually getting better returns. So that tells you maybe it's not so overvalued. Now, other metrics tell you that it is. Here's another one. Headwinds of the strong dollar are exaggerated. Everybody's so worried about the strong dollar. Well, yeah, it will affect our exports, but has it crushed the exports? Well, it depends on the sector you're in, but it hasn't been that bad. And over the past year, the dollar's gone up about 13%, okay, against other currencies. And that is a problem, but it's not as bad. And what will happen is everybody will get used to it. It's not getting more and more strong. It's not. So probably the next move of the dollar probably more on the weak side than the strong side, even though I do feel long-term over the next 5-10 years, the dollar is going to be, you know, stronger. And pain and over energy is overstated. The pain is overstated. The big guys are still making money. The pain is going to be confined to the shale oil production. That's where the pain is going to be fine. Crashes are not becoming the norm. We've had two big crashes, the dot-com and the financial crash, 2000 and 2008. Well, that's not going to, it's normal to have corrections, and every so often you'll have a crash. But it's not going to be every couple of years. That's not going to happen. Don't worry about it so much. Volatility is picking up. But, you know, that's a really just a return to normal volatility. We've had a lack of volatility for a number of years, ever since the most recent recession. The stock market volatility was pretty calm. Okay? And you know what? A correction is health restoring. So we had a correction in the summer. Everybody freaks out about, it was 13%, people. Wasn't even that much. Look how much every, I think what the problem was is it really, this correction started in May. It was a very slow correction until the August. And then all of a sudden it scared everybody because in 4 days it really took a dive. Interesting. This is a Mess Talk. We've reached the halfway mark in the hour. There's still plenty of time to join in the conversation. Give me a call.
More Invest Talk on this Friday, October 9th, and we're open to any money question. Is a reverse mortgage a good solution for you or your aging parent? Bring your question to Steve right now. His line is open at 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. Don't save your questions up, everybody. I want you to ask them. So if you have a question about the basics or anything complicated, well, if I answer the complicated one, I'll tell you. At least I'll be honest about that. But give us a call. Whether you're experienced or a beginning investor, doesn't matter. 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Steve and Justin. This is Sean from New York. I hope you're having a great day. Considering that holiday season is coming up, I was wondering if it's a good time to buy Macy's. Thank you for your help. Bye.
Okay, Macy's company, they have 840 department stores in 45 states, Puerto Rico, Guam, with plans to open 4 more. Well, that's good. They also have a joint pact recently signed with Alibaba Group to launch an online flagship store in China on the company's T-Mail global software platform. Anyways, I'm always concerned about big department stores. I think it's tough. They're in a tough environment these days with online shopping and instant access on your cell phone to compare prices. I think they need to move to something more, something different or more exciting about the stores. I don't think they're going to go away or anything. I just think that their sales are going to be harder and harder to capture. They have to have an online presence. And anyways, Macy's itself, that fell sharply from $72 back in July to now $51, and they have gone sideways for about a half a month or so, which tells me that maybe this is the bottom that they're putting in. Good return on equity of 26%. They're going to make $4.70 this year. That's 11% higher than last year, and then $4.75 next year. They have a little bit more debt than I'm comfortable with. And the sales are flat over the last 2 years, up plus or minus 2 to 3%, plus or minus quarter over quarter. They do have a nice dividend of 2.8%. It's probably pretty secure. Will it go up for the holiday season? Chances are good that they will. They will go, if the market rallies, it will rally with it. I am not really keen on the big box stores, though. I am just not. I think that they have a shift in how people shop, and it's away from the big department stores. Now, they're not going to die. They're not going to go out of business tomorrow. I'm just saying that they're going to be, it's going to be tough for them. Difficult. Time for InvestTalk 101, how to profit in a bear market. A bear market is defined as a drop of 20% or more in the indexes, the S&P 500, let's say. The idea here is that when things get bad in the market, are there opportunities that surface? Here are some ways to profit in a bear market. You could short positions. Taking a short position is also called short selling. Occurs when you sell shares that you don't own of a stock, anticipating the stock will go by. So you borrow somebody else's shares and you sell it at today's price. And your idea is to sell it today at a high price, say $50 a share. And as it goes down, you got to buy it back at some point, give it back to the person you borrowed. You're hoping it's going to go down from $50 down to $25, and then you make the difference, $25 a share. That's shorting or short selling. It's not easy. You can also use short ETFs or exchange-traded fund, or sometimes called an inverse ETF. And they will short for you, or they'll short an index, or they'll whatever it is they're tracking that they're shorting. Same kind of principle, shorting. Then there's leverage ETFs. You got to be careful of that, because they can do two times the short of an index. So, you know, those are for short-term trading instruments, really, not for long-term. They also have short mutual funds. There are also funds that do both short and long. Not a lot of them, but they are out there. So there's different ways to benefit from a down market, a bear market. And the trick part, as I mentioned earlier, is the market has a bias to the upside, and you're betting against that bias. And it's very difficult to do. Many people are unsuccessful at it. So remember, I said shorting may be the best way, is use shorting as a defensive mechanism for the overall portfolio. Not necessarily just to make money, but for defensive purpose. That's InvestTalk 101. You can read more about profiting in a bear market on Investopedia.com. I like that website, Investopedia.com. And there's a link right there under our InvestTalk talking point on InvestTalk.com.
KPP Financial offers a whole range of financial services for their clients beyond management of investment portfolios. And now KPP Financial has a licensed real estate agent on staff to help you make the best possible choices when it comes to decisions about your home. To learn more about their investment programs, visit investtalk.com and click on the investment tab.
Hi, Steve. I was trying to check what's the best way or any website or tool which tells me the pattern of institutional buying and selling. Not very old data, but like in the last 2 to 3 days. I really appreciate that if you can give me that data. This is Mohan. Thanks. Bye.
Well, that data is going to cost you, especially if you want recent data. That's going to cost you. You're going to have to pay for it. Now, where can you pay for it? IBIS. S&P 500 and Morningstar are the three main ones. I use Morningstar that I can get, that I pay for. Morningstar also has free, every one of those have free data as well, but that data is not going to give you what you're asking for, which is the amount of, you're looking for sellers by institution, buyers and sellers by institutions now, recent, as recent as possible. Remember, these institutions don't want to advertise what they're doing. They're going to try to hide it. They don't go out and say, oh, I'm Vanguard and we're going to buy Apple computer for the next 2 weeks. they're hiding it. They're trying to hide. So that information is pretty difficult to get. There's no websites you're going to get it for free. It just doesn't exist. Can you get institutional buying and selling for free? Yes, but it's going to be old. It's going to be old. And, I mean, when I say old, quarter, last 6 months, last year, that's old. So you're not going to get any new information. But it's a good idea to have that information. I think, it's helpful because institutions do drive stock prices, everybody. They're buying and then selling drives it. And think about this. When a mutual fund owns, or a bunch of mutual funds own stocks, and the public who owns mutual funds, 401k through their 401k or individual, when they want panic and get out, and they tell their mutual fund, I want you to go to cash in my mutual fund, so sell all the shares and go to cash, that means that mutual fund has to sell stocks. Now, mind you, they do have cash on hand. It's only when the selling pressure is heavy do they have to start selling the positions. And what happens when they start selling positions? Drives the stocks down even faster. Just trying to remind you about that stuff. Okay, Irvine Company, with their company called Realty Track, and an ethnic tech company that tracks real estate, recently released a report on cash buyers. Cash buyers. And they found that 46% of Mandarin speaking Chinese buyers in the last 17 months paid all cash, and that triples the number 5 years ago. $22 billion worth of real estate in the last 12 months alone. That's a 72% increase year over year. All cash buyers. And the average price of a home, $500,000. So these are Chinese buyers coming over here with lots of cash and buying expensive property. Now you're going to say, well, that's not too much because you're in the Bay Area. You know, the live radio is in the Bay Area, where $500,000 doesn't buy you a lot. It doesn't buy you a lot where I live here in Orange County, California. But across the nation, that's very expensive, especially when the median price of a house is like $180,000. So, I find this fascinating. Remember, the Chinese were buying lots and lots of property in their own country, and now they're moving away from that and buying properties here. Don't you find that interesting? And this is a very good support for our real estate market. Now, since I'm old and I can remember other real estate bubbles, I remember in 1980s when the Japanese were buying real estate like crazy here in the United States. Japanese were buying everything in sight. Seems like everybody's worried that they're going to own all of America. They're buying office buildings, houses. Do you remember that time? And it was always in the news and how terrible it was. And we're going to be owned by foreigners. And I remember pointing out then that, you know, that's not going to happen. And the biggest owner of our real estate even then was not Asian countries. It was England. And it probably still is England, even though I don't have that data in my fingertips. Okay. So think about that. I think this bodes well for our real estate market because it's another leg of buyers. Especially in the face that the millennial generation is kind of falling behind or not being aggressive buyers, and they're slow to buy as they get older and older and older, though, they're going to keep moving into the market, housing market, pushing prices up. And this report only dealt with housing, not other real estate, just housing. I like that. I liked it. I thought that was pretty interesting, and I don't have a problem with the Chinese buying their real estate. Paying cash is great. There's more than one reason to become an InvestTalk Insider. In fact, there are dozens of good reasons. One is our monthly economic forecast. It went out to all insiders this week. It's free to join and really pretty simple. Just go to InvestTalk.com and sign up.
Our InvestTalk mission is to help you make better investing decisions. To do that on your own, thumbs up or thumbs down choices based on good, solid investing principles. But we need your questions to keep us on track. 888-99-CHART or click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
Hi, Steve. My name is Rubel, and thank you so much for the show. I am an early learner right now about investments and everything, so your show really helps. since you were talking about ETFs yesterday, and I picked up one couple of days back. It's iShares Corp S&P Small Cap ETF. The symbol is IJR. I picked it up a couple of days back, and I was just wondering if you could suggest me if I should hold it for a longer term or how it's going to perform over the next few months. Just needed your suggestion on that. Thank you so much for the show. Bye-bye.
Okay, this is the iShares IJR to ETF, iShares Cord S&P Small Cap 600 Index. That's what it's tracking. This ETF is tracking the exchange traded fund, tracking the Standard & Poor's Small Cap 600 Index. Small cap means small companies. Small companies means more volatility, both on the upside and the downside. So it's going to grow. This should go up faster when the market goes up and go down faster when the market goes down. Whenever you hear the word small cap, just think more volatility. And don't equate volatility with bad. That's bad. Volatility is bad. No. Volatility is neither bad nor good. It's just that you need to recognize that it's volatility. And I would not sell it. You just bought it a few days ago. I think if the market rallies toward the end of the year, which it generally does, I would probably hold on to it. Now, will it go down in value? Maybe, because we've had a bottom in August, a retest of that bottom in September, and now we're coming off that bottom, so that's a double bottom now, and maybe we're going to see a rally at the end of the year, or maybe we'll have another retest. But I would probably hold on to it now that you've already bought it. I don't see any reason to sell it unless the market breaks below its August lows. And then I don't know how far the market will go down from there. Let's go to John in San Jose. How you doing, John?
Steve, how are you?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Hey, I just wanted to see what you thought about eBay. I know in the past you said when they split you were a fan of PayPal. And what do you think of eBay these days as a standalone company?
Okay, eBay is a pretty good company. They have pretty decent growth of 7-8%, and it's pretty cheap. Though I like it a lot because of its cheapness, John. It's going to it's going to make $1.93, and it's a $24 stock. Okay, and it's going to grow maybe 10%. So $1.93 on a $24 stock means that the PE is going to be, 20. I kind of like that. I think that that's not bad for eBay necessarily. And I think they're low on their estimates. I think it's going to actually grow more than that. Good return on equity, 17%. Hardly any debt. Management owns 8%. So those things all add up to me that this looks like a good place to buy eBay. Okay?
Great. Thanks for the feedback.
Thanks, John. Appreciate the call. Each month I schedule a day or two to visit one of our satellite offices in California. I'll be in San Jose November 11th for a day of one-to-one meetings with listeners who would like me to review their retirement portfolios and talk about our programs. Times are set on a first-come, first-served basis, 888-99-CHART, or go to our website and click on and schedule a meeting.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. Why not make use of KPP Financial's free service to InvestTalk listeners? Sign up for a virtual meeting with Steve on Skype or telephone. He can help you review your retirement accounts and make suggestions if you like. Appointments are made on a first-come, first-served basis. Just go to InvestTalk.com and click on Schedule a Meeting.
888-99-CHART. We're going to talk to Tony in Cupertino. How you doing, Tony?
Oh, I'm doing fine, Steve. Thank you very much for my call.
Thank you.
My question is on the labor participation rate and unemployment rate.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
To my way of thinking, you can't have them both low at the same time. We've got a 38-year low labor participation rate, and our unemployment rate should maybe be like 10% or above to make sense. And I don't think that the unemployment rate is very real that we have at 5.1.
It probably isn't. And so for everybody else, Tony, what Tony's talking about, of course, we have 5.1 unemployment rate, And labor participation means those people are old enough to work. Out of all those people, men and women, how many are actually working? And we're at a 38 low, as Tony points out, 38-year low of how many people are actually working. And then we have also very low unemployment rate. Well, you're going to have to go to how the government counts, because they really don't count the unemployment rate very accurately. And why I say that is they count people on unemployment claims as unemployed, but as soon as they drop off and stop looking for a job, they don't count them as unemployed, even if they're 35 years old and looking for, you know, are 35 and should be working. They don't count them as unemployed. But that that person does get picked up in the labor participation rate. So we have this, Tony, I think you're right. We have a false number on unemployment. And I'm not chalking this up to some big, you know, government conspiracy. That's not what this really is about. It's just about how they count and why it's inaccurate. And if you really need to go to what's called a U6 number, and I don't want to get into too deep of this, but and that's another way they count unemployment, and it's closer to 10%. U6 number. Go ahead, Tony.
That would kind of make sense. And it would, So the like the Federal Reserve and people pay attention to the unemployment rate of 5.1%, and maybe they really shouldn't.
Probably shouldn't, and maybe that's one of the reasons why they're not raising rates, interest rates, Tony, the Fed, because the workforce is not as strong as they would like. The U6 number counts people are working part-time as not being fully employed, as well as people not working, not just the people not collecting unemployment benefits. But I do like the labor participation rate. That's my favorite because it gives an overall picture of all the working age people. So, Tony, thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Different ways Oktoberfest is celebrated here in the U.S. from Germany. Of course, Oktoberfest came from Germany, right? And, of course, we like to adopt it because it sounds like a fun thing to adopt. And we did. Okay, great. Something light. And that has nothing to do with the stock market or earnings, corporate, you know, economics. No. Maybe economics a little bit. Okay, first of all, the Oktoberfest in Germany is a 16-day festival. Did you know that? 16 days. And in Germany, it's more about culture than just drinking beer. Mind you, drinking beer is an important part of the culture. But that it's more about the culture of Germany, of Bavaria, than it is about drinking beer. In Germany, do you realize they start drinking at 9 o'clock in the morning? The bars and places are open at 9. That doesn't really happen in the United States during Oktoberfest. In Germany, they dress up. Those lederhosen, whatever things they wear. We don't dress up for it. Well, not very many of us don't. Okay? And a very important beer, you will not find any new kinds of beer in Germany. In Germany, they have very strict standards dating back to 1487 on how to brew beer. And there's the German Beer Purity Law of 1906, which restricts from forming new kinds of beers that we come up with all the time. One more. Those long tables at Oktoberfest in Germany kind of force you to make new friends. We don't have those kind of long tables. We just go down to the local bar and have a good time. Our hour's up. Thank you for being here and spending this time with me. I do appreciate it. We want to help decide on your next webinar topic. We want you to help us. So take our instant survey. We want to know your ideas. Choose from our list or write in your own idea for our next seminar. Go to InvestTalk.com, click on the InvestTalk tab, and click on Webinar. If you have questions you need answered, always go to the 24-hour listen line, 888-99-CHART. I am registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. On behalf of Justin Klein and everybody at KPP Financial, thank you for listening, and we'll hope to see you on Monday.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically.
Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.